Well, welcome, everybody. Thank you for being here. You guys hear me okay in there? Okay. So in this last practice period, I sat in on a few of them. And for those of you who haven't done one of our practice periods, we break up into small groups and have discussions. And then we go back into the big group and have a big group discussion. So we were in our small groups, and somehow the discussion moved to emotions and anger. And I said something like, you know, when compassion is present, then we can just stay right with all of our emotions, even the really difficult ones, and with a welcoming attitude. Because I said something like, we actually have to experience our emotions, whatever they are, with compassion, because an aspect of compassion is openness. And if we're not open, then we can't experience what's actually going on. We close down to it. So this was the type of discussion that was going on in our small groups. And then Stacy, who was leading the practice period, started ringing the bell, time for the small groups to break up and for us to go back to the big group. Well, just as she was ringing the bell and we were breaking up, someone in my small group just said, well, how can you be compassionate for anger? Well, you know, we had to go into our big groups. There was no chance to respond to that question. But I felt this responsibility to the question. And so I kind of took that question with me as I went back into the big group. And I was just kind of thinking about it, thinking about my own experience with difficult emotions, what it's been like, and also thinking about what the literature tells us about this. And then during that big group discussion, someone brought up this koan, I think it was Benton, brought up the hanging from a tree koan. Is that you? Okay, somebody brought that up. So here we are. And that's what I'm going to be talking about today. It's Sanyin's Hanging from a Tree. Now, those of you who have programs, you have the official koan, which is, I'm using this book, The Gateless Barrier. But for those of you who don't, I'm just going to tell you the koan. And it's Sanyin who is talking, and he says, it's as if you're up in a tree, hanging from a limb with your teeth, and your arms, your legs, your feet can't touch any of the branches, so you're just hanging there with your teeth, by the teeth. And then someone appears down below and asks you a question. Now, this question roughly translates to something like, what is the meaning of all this? And Robert Aiken, who is the who compiled this these koans in this particular book, said that this is a life or death question. So it's a serious question, you know. So what do you do? There's the koan. What do you do? How do you respond? So just to give you a little bit of background, which is customary when we start talking about koans, Sanyin lived in the roughly the 9th century in China, and he was an intellectual. He greatly valued the scriptures, and he greatly valued his own intellect. One day, his teacher asked him a question. And this was a question that all his studies and his great intellect could not figure out. So he went back to his, after ruminating about it, and, you know, and searching through his studies and through the scriptures, he went back to the teacher and he asked the teacher for help. But the teacher said, "My understanding is my own, and it will never be yours." So Sanyin decided to abandon his studies and even to leave the monastery, to live the life of a hermit. Maybe he felt like he was undeserving of the teachings. You know, there's some hint of that, that feeling. So that's all I'm going to say about the background. There's more to this story, and you can read that for yourself if you're interested. But much later in his life, he wrote this koan. It's as if. So for me, the hardest part about feeling that hanging from a limb, feeling that flapping in the wind, feeling, which is an expression from my generation, flapping in the wind, the hardest part about that for me is the idea that I shouldn't be. The idea that it shouldn't be this way. But when I'm thinking like this, I'm wrapped up in my own questions. I'm self-absorbed, and my world becomes really small. And I think the natural impulse that most of us have when we hear this koan is to try and figure out how to get out of the tree, so that you can answer the question, right? This poor guy needs your help. He's come to you for guidance. So you feel it's your responsibility to guide the poor fellow, right? I don't think this koan is like is about that. I don't think it's about trying to figure out how to escape the situation. The koan doesn't seem to offer an escape. Anyway, doesn't even seem to point to one. Doesn't even seem to suggest that there is one. So it must be pointing to something else. And I think that something else is, I think this koan is saying, even though you feel like a mess inside, even though you feel like you're flapping in the wind, even though you feel inadequate, confused, fearful, angry, maybe you're even growling at the limb you're hanging from, even so, the world needs you. And the world needs you just as you are, hanging from a limb by your teeth. Because it's not just you hanging there. It's all of us. So Robert Aiken, again, the guy who compiled these koans and made comments about them, he said that the koan is about the dilemma that everyone is facing all the time. Everyone is in a dilemma. And to resolve this this koan, we learn to act within the dilemma and not try to escape it. So I think this koan is Zen's interpretation of the First Noble Truth. And for those of you who are not familiar with the First Noble Truth, in classical Buddhism, the First Noble Truth is the is about the universality of dukkha. And dukkha is points to the pain of just being alive. You know, the pain of living with losing your loved ones, with growing old, with getting sick, the pain of that. So the First Noble Truth is about the pain and dissatisfaction caused by impermanence and interdependence. Impermanence says that everything we love will pass away, is actually passing away right now. You know, my granddaughter, who I love dearly, it's like she's changing every minute. She's 18. How did that happen? Changing every minute. And interdependence says that the welfare of one thing depends on the welfare of everything. So how in the world do we take care of everything? Hanging by our teeth. That's what it feels like. But that's the limb we're hanging from. We're hanging from the limb of interdependence and impermanence. And there's no escaping it. So yesterday morning when I was preparing this talk, I get up early and I enjoy the morning, so I get up early and work on whatever I've got coming up that I need to be working on. And yesterday morning, I was working on this talk and really kind of very focused on it. And my phone gave me that little, you know, ring that I'd gotten a text. Well, I knew what it was. It was my sister. Every Saturday and Sunday morning, my sister and I talk on the phone. And my sister lives in South Carolina. We talk on the phone every Saturday and Sunday morning for about an hour. It's our thing. We've been doing this ever since her husband died about 3 years ago. And this is how we support each other. This is how we attend to our relationship. So it's important. But I didn't stop writing right away. I didn't stop working on my on the talk right away. It was a dilemma. Now, it was just a small dilemma because I love my sister. But I did feel the pointy end of it. If I'd ignored that ring, I would have been ignoring my responsibility to the other, in this case, which was my sister. But I was hanging out with Robert Aiken at the time, and he helped me to do the right thing. So I put my writing aside and called my sister, as I did again this morning. But how about impermanence on a big scale? So I started writing, started sitting with this koan, actually, several weeks ago, right after the practice period. And during that time, a 7.0 earthquake hit Japan. You probably remember that. And just a few days later, a 7.8 earthquake hit Ecuador. So it made me wonder what this koan would mean to the people there. So when the earth is shaking, and I've experienced this quite a lot because I've spent many years in California, when the earth is shaking, there's nothing to release and nowhere to go. During an earthquake, you panic and you look for an escape. It's natural to do that, but there isn't one. During one particular earthquake, when I was in San Diego, we lived on the 9th floor, and I was there by myself. And the building started to shake just a little bit at first, so you just kind of sit there to wait to see what's going to happen. You know, in California, it's kind of a thing to start guessing what the what the Richter scale is. But then it started to roll, you know, and the building really started to move. What's really surprising when you're inside with an earthquake is the noise. It's really loud because the building is, you know, moving. Everything in it is moving, and it's really loud. So I panicked. I wanted to escape. And in this panic, my mind was telling me, well, you can't use the elevator. I know you can't use the elevator. So I ran to the stairwell, and I started running down the stairs. But as I was running down the stairs, I started wondering, well, which is the safest? Is it safer to fall with the building? Or is it safer to be on the ground and have the building fall on you? So it was a dilemma. I was in the stairwell and I didn't know whether to go up or down. There was no escape. And as long as we're trying to escape the situation, there's no chance of calmness or peacefulness. But this is nature. We didn't really evolve for the purpose of having a peaceful heart. We evolved for the purpose of surviving. So we react to strong negative emotions by looking for danger so that we can know which way to run. So we know how to escape. So this is our natural reaction. But today our actual survival is rarely at stake. But the quality of our survival, our emotional well-being, maybe this is the new phase of our evolution. Trying to figure that one out. So the first noble truth is about the universality of dukkha, the universality of the pain that we experience just from being alive. And the second noble truth of suffering says that our desire to escape our negative emotions is the source of our suffering. So first noble truth says there will be pain in this life because that's the way it is. Old age, death. But the suffering, the edge that we feel, that's almost intolerable. That comes from our desire to escape. So it's kind of interesting, the very behavior that guaranteed our survival is also the one that guarantees our suffering. It's a dilemma. Actually, I don't think we really have a hard time accepting that life is like hanging from a limb. And we kind of know that, you know. We know that nothing is certain, that everything could change any moment. But the second noble truth of suffering says, we're always wanting to know, why do I have to be hanging from this limb? Why can't I be hanging from that limb over there? Desire and aversion. Second noble truth says that we suffer because of desire and aversion. Aversion. Why do I have to be hanging from this limb? Desire. Why can't I be hanging from that limb? So it's this being filled with desire and aversion that gives us the feeling, you know, that we're flapping in the wind. But the third noble truth says that there's a way to alleviate the suffering from that feeling. So now the questioner that appears below the limb, maybe the question that he's asking or she's asking is, how do I let go of desire and aversion? So how do we respond to that? Well, you can't intellectualize your problem. Intellectualize the answer. You can't just, you know, tell a person how they can avoid or get rid of their desire and aversion by just sharing Buddha's teachings about the first and second noble truth, as I'm doing right now. But in this moment, I'm not resolving the koan. I come closer to resolving the koan when I'm sitting in zazen, not saying anything. finding my own peaceful heart. The koan actually takes away any possibility of intellectualizing, because you can't talk. And this includes talking to ourselves. As a matter of fact, I think it's mainly pointing to talking to ourselves. So in this way, Sanyin, who wrote the koan, is actually being kind of a grandmotherly teacher. We use that phrase, grandmotherly teacher, or grandmotherly teaching, meaning that it's a very gentle one. But when you first read this koan, it doesn't seem very gentle, does it? But because Sanyin, when he presented the koan, he actually removed the biggest obstacle of resolving the koan. That's why it's a grandmotherly teaching. He removed the possibility of your talking to yourself and ruminating, because that's how we try to escape. So after years of practice and being basically a hermit, Sanyin learned that intellectualizing, critical thinking, comparing, judging, that's not the way, because it only leads to more desire and aversion. So the question actually keeps us right where we are. We can't escape the situation because there's the question. And as long as we're alive, the question will always be there. And it will always be something we can't answer. Because the question is really about, you know, how are you going to live your life? How are you going to live your life? But how can we know? I mean, we have no control over the events that shape our lives. We have some control over how we respond. But we never know how we're going to respond. And we can't be certain of how we're going to respond. We never know how we're going to be affected by something that comes out of left field. And left field is always there, throwing curveballs at us. This is the way of things. So how do we have a peaceful heart right there within the dilemma? That's what this koan is asking. And that's what Zen practice is all about. And that's what Zen meditation is all about. And that's what this koan is all about. So can we try that right now? Can you find a comfortable position and settle into it? Closing your eyes for a few minutes, just listening to my voice. Taking a few calming breaths, settling in. Imagine that you're sitting in an old one-room cabin with open windows along the bank of a lake. You're looking out of one of the windows at the lake, and it's very calm. Its surface is like a mirror. It reflects the blue sky with plumes of white clouds moving across it. It reflects birds soaring by. Even the foliage and the trees along its edge are reflected perfectly. Creatures of all sizes have come to drink. And you too, while sitting in the window, are nourished by the stillness and the clarity of the lake. as you sit there, a gentle breeze begins to blow through the open windows. It gathers up all your thoughts like dust and carries them off. It blows away the boundary between your mind and the still lake. Can you be with that stillness for a few minutes? Now a wind is whipping up. Ripples distort the reflections. The clouds grow dark. The lake's surface loses its clarity, replaced by white caps rushing this way and that. Can you feel the sudden dis-ease, like you're being tossed about? What is this disturbance? Is it sadness or grief or anger? You're in a ghost world now, fighting with the demons that are there, the realm of thought. What thoughts are being known right now? Are you remembering someone you've lost? Are you arguing with somebody in your head, proving that you're right, or that they should have done this or that, or that they didn't love you enough? Recognizing that this is the hell realm where no healing is possible. Moving back down now into your body to be with whatever emotion is there. Feeling the energy of the ripples and white caps. Your whole body is filled with this energy. Staying with this energy. Allowing your awareness to penetrate it. Trusting that your awareness will find its own depth. Sinking all the way into this turbulent energy, aware of thoughts attempting to intrude, but ignoring them. From this depth, there is a different kind of calm. Not like the one you experienced before the clouds turned dark and the wind whipped up. Can you sense the healing nature of what's happening now? From this new depth, you may see that this is an old sadness, an old anger, an old grief that you've carried for a long time. It's been waiting for your willingness to free it, to allow it to live its life and move on. Medicine and sickness meet each other in the darkness. And through this encounter, each becomes known to you. This insight has the capacity to change your life. To allow you to be with whatever is happening. And trust that life is giving you what you need to learn. Returning now to your breathing, trusting that you have the capacity to welcome whatever arises in your field of awareness and learn what it has to teach. Thank you, everybody. Go ahead and open your eyes now and come back to the room. I hope that meditation exercise was helpful. It was my answer to how do you have compassion for anger or any other strong emotion that you're feeling. How do you do it? For me, it's kind of like that. So when Robert Aiken wrote that we must resolve the dilemma within the dilemma, I think he was saying that we have to resolve grief in the emotion, right? Within the emotion of grief. We must resolve sadness right within the emotion of sadness, not by going up into our heads and ruminating about it. That's the escape. That's what we seek. But the second noble truth says that's the source of our suffering. So here we are, back to the practice period question. How do we do it? So anger can be acknowledged and released skillfully within the energy of the anger itself. But learning to discern the energy of the emotion from the destructive energy of the emotional reactivity is the key. And emotional reactivity is a behavior. It's a behavior that begins in the mind. It's the struggle against what's happening. And it's usually aggressive. Whether it's outwardly focused, aggressive towards somebody else, blaming somebody else, or whether it's inwardly focused, attacking yourself, feeling inadequate, self-loathing. But the feeling tone of emotional reactivity is different from the feeling tone of experiencing the emotion directly. The feeling tone of emotional reactivity has an edge to it. Tim referred to it as shards. But the problem with anger is that it's such a powerful emotion that it can feel like we're hanging from a limb in tornado winds. It's hard to stay with it. It's hard to resist our impulse to escape. It's hard to not contract against the anger, against the emotion. It's hard not to push it back to wherever it came from so we don't have to feel it. But when we do that, instead of feeling the sensation of anger, we become angry. And when we do that often enough, aggressiveness becomes our conditioned reactivity to the emotion of anger. And usually it's our conditioned reactivity to most any of the other negative things that we experience in life. And this aggressiveness is what we experience instead of experiencing our emotions. But we do have the capacity to change our behavior. And we do that by changing our relationship with our emotions, by taking care of our relationships with our emotions, knowing that each experience has something to teach us. Pema Chodron wrote a book called The Wisdom of No Escape. I'll bet a lot of you guys have read that. In it, she wrote, "The basic creative energy of life, the life force, bubbles up and courses through all of existence. It can be experienced as open, free, unburdened, full of possibility, energizing. Or this very same energy can be experienced as petty, narrow, stuck, caught. So when we resist, when we contract against, refuse to experience this energy in an open and free way, then we experience it in a natural, in a narrow, stuck way. And we can't help but struggle against it because we feel trapped. Just like I felt trapped on the ninth floor in the stairwell, not knowing whether to go up or down. So my husband didn't react when there were earthquakes by trying to escape. Not because he wasn't afraid, he wasn't with me at that time when I was trying to escape, but he was with me a lot of times when we were together a lot of times when there were an earthquake. And he didn't panic, but not because he wasn't afraid, but he had cultivated a different relationship to fear. When he got afraid, he got very calm. And his calm helped me when he was there. So whenever there was an earthquake and he got very calm and his calm helped me, he was resolving this koan perfectly. Time check. So according to Robert Aiken, the koan says, accepting one's lot in life is also a manner of accepting the pain of others and taking responsibility for their healing. So that's accepting the interdependence of life. Accepting the interdependence. So I'm gonna end with one last story. This is one of my favorite stories. This happened to a friend of mine, and she told me this story. I'm going to call her Cynthia, even though that's not her name. Cynthia loved animals. She was very good with animals. Horses, dogs, they were just her life. And she told me the story of getting, of adopting a new horse. And she tried very hard to establish a relationship, a closeness with this horse, which had not been difficult for her because it was just kind of automatic. She was just so good with animals. But this horse just didn't seem to like her. There was no connection, no matter what she did. And she spent a lot of time with this horse. Just no connection. So then she told me about this particular time in her life where everything just fell apart and she was a mess. She was really struggling on the inside. So it was time for her to go exercise the horse. But instead of getting on him and riding him, she just, you know, took the reins and was just walking him in circles. You know, suffering. And then suddenly, she just dropped to the ground and started sobbing. And that horse came around to the front and put his big forehead right there on her chest. Right there. And held her in that way. I think that horse resolved this koan perfectly. So can we. Thank you, everybody. So we have some time for questions or comments, if you have any. Yeah.
How did you get down from the ninth floor?
I didn't. I just went back up to my apartment. Wrote it out. I was afraid the building would fall on me if I went down. Mm. It was scary, though.
I had an interesting observation when I was watching the videos live when the World Trade Centers were burning. Mm. I was having this thought, how are they going to get those people out? And I just couldn't figure it out. And it never occurred to me until the first building went down that they aren't going to get out. There was no escape for them.
Yeah.
It was hard.
Yeah. And that's what this koan is about. It's hard. No, life is difficult. How are we going to do it? You know, how are we going to find our peaceful heart?
I listened to something this morning that said that if you're a rescuer, that through the world as a rescuer, and in fact you're really a victim yourself. So what's the difference between, if you can discern the difference between moving through the world, helping people compassionately, versus being a rescuer?
Oh, so when you first said that, I thought you were talking about a medic, somebody who actually goes out and
like
a
driven to rescue
people. Yes.
What's wrong with them, or for lack
yes.
of a better phrase?
Well, that is not being able to get yourself out of the way. You know, that's the term that they use for it is codependence. You know, you're needing to feel needed. Because your heart is not at rest, you know.
But how do you know which? How can you tell what you're doing? Compassionate person that is just there to help people, and it's nothing to do with having been victimized and needing to rescue people.
Well, it's really it isn't that difficult to discern. Because if you're needing to rescue somebody, you'll find yourself giving them advice. You know, you'll find yourself indulging in their suffering a little bit, you know. Whereas if you're just able to be open with them and allow them to experience whatever they're experiencing and just be there with them, without trying to change their experience, without trying to fix them. That's all we can do, help them. Because if they're feeling a lot of grief over some great loss, then grief is the most natural thing in the world for them to feel. And that's the healing. You don't have to do anything. Just be with them. So if you're trying to fix them, there's a problem.
So is that actually that you're able to keep yourself separate while you're helping them?
No, it's not a matter of keeping yourself separate. It's a matter of not indulging in their suffering.
Okay.
Yeah. I think the healing is to keep yourself open to. Or the helping them to heal is to keep yourself open. I hope that was helpful. Anyone else?
That was really profound and what is my talk, but so I originally thought when I was looking at this, I thought, well, why doesn't the guy who's asking the question actually help the guy off out of the tree? And see, he's asking a question like, you don't need to help, the guy in the tree needs to help, but I was thinking about your the thought about verbal and cognitive solution, and then there's no answer, so the verbal and cognitive solution will result in loss of life. But I think that's true. But I think there's also this idea that this reality, words and cognition are part of the solution not to get out of the tree, but to get into the tree, because if we can look at it as the life is the tree of life, and the and so the guy in the tree is the trunk of the tree of the life, the tree of life, and so. So I don't know what I'm saying, but except so, that there's just become the tree, and the words and the cognition are part of the tree.
So what I will say to that, Steve, is I think where you're getting stumped a little bit is that you're trying to look at this koan as being the one teaching. So, of course, there's a place for words and sharing like I'm doing right now. But this teaching and this koan is pointing to something else, something deeper. It's not saying that, I mean, it's so look at this koan for the teaching that it's offering rather than looking at this koan to find what is missing from it. That's why we have like 100 koans. Pick the one that works for you right here and now. What's your problem right here and now? Are you thinking too much? Well, maybe it's this koan. Are you retreating too much and not being involved? Maybe it's another koan. Okay? Thanks, Steve. So I think we need to turn it over to our Doan now.